For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mighty Air 1090, ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Friday as we head into the weekend. Let's bring in the Hall of Famer, our man in Las Vegas, Steve Carp. Carpy, how are you doing?
Good. You know, it's funny you mentioned the Hall of Famer, Arash. Tonight is the induction ceremony for the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. And CJ Watson, you know, played many years in the NBA, is set to head of this class. So congrats to him and all the inductees who will be joining us.
That is awesome. Yes, I was lucky that the first time that I went to that Hall of Fame ceremony was when you were getting inducted. Wow. And they do a great job out there in Henderson. But you went to another incredible event last night, and I didn't know that this arena had hosted this many big fights, but the MGM Grand Garden Arena celebrating 100 big prize fights. Again, did they have another fight coming up this weekend? Steve, what was that like? And if you can, you know, for years, obviously, Thomas and Mack was the venue prior to that, you know, the tennis courts outside of Caesars. But the MGM Grand Garden Arena was really built to, again, you know, host concerts as well, but prize fights like that. And when you look at the list, it is not the most extravagant arena, certainly not like T-Mobile Arena with the club seats and the suites. But the amount of history that was made on the floor that you stood on last night, talk about the significance of 100 big fights taking place there.
You know, when you think about the history of this city, for something to last 30 years is a major accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly thought they would have torn down the arena and built Slot World at the MGM. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, but here you are 30 years later. I mean, this thing is as Spartan as an arena gets. There are no suites. There's no club seating. There's no fancy stuff. It's just an unbelievably good place to watch a fight or an MMA card. Either one. And that's why it was designed the way it was. And, you know, just thinking about all the big fights I covered and it really brought back a flood of memories as I wrote.
Steve, I mean, it's still my favorite place to cover a fight. And certainly before I moved to Las Vegas, it was my favorite when I stayed at the MGM Grand, because you come down from your room and you're basically there. You know, you walk through the casino, you get the vibe, you get the atmosphere. I mean, just in terms of convenience, in terms of really getting that big fight feel, it was such a great place to watch a fight. And again, I'm glad that it's still there. And again, it does not host the biggest fights, because again, you want that big gate that comes with having those suites and those club seats. I have an idea of a couple, but as you were talking to a lot of the people last night, what is the greatest fight? What is the biggest memory you have of covering a fight at the MGM Grand Garden?
Well, I think the Tyson Holyfield rematch, the ear bite fight.
Yep.
It's still the most bizarre thing I've ever covered. I mean, I wasn't even supposed to be the main writer that night. If you want a crazy story that leads up to it, Dean Jipe, who was my boss when I worked at the Las Vegas Sun, was also our main boxing writer, and he was really good, by the way. Well, when he got to the MGM that night, his seat was toward the back, not toward the front like it normally is. Because remember, this was a huge event.
Massive.
And there were media from all over the world. And so Dean did not like his seat, and he left the arena. Okay, now cell phones were kind of new then. And he calls me up and says, "You're covering the fight." I said, "What do you mean I'm covering the fight? Where the hell are you?" He says, "I left." I said, "Why'd you leave?" He goes, "I didn't like the seat they gave me." I said, "You're kidding me." He goes, "No, I'm not kidding you. You're covering the fight." So myself and Tim Graham, who now works at The Athletic, we wound up covering the fight. And, you know, we all know what happened. It was just crazy. And, of course, you know, as a sidebar, the aftermath with all the craziness in the casino and, you know, Dominic Wilkins being, you know, accused of stealing chips from one of the blackjack tables that got overturned. And, you know, it was just lunacy. I remember they shut down the monorail, and Tim and I had to walk like a mile to get back to our cars because we parked over at Bally's, and we took the monorail over. So that was the craziest night. And, you know, I think but the biggest event itself, just for the sheer size of it, was the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, which was years in the making.
Yeah.
And they finally met. Pacquiao had a damaged shoulder. He was less than 100%. Floyd was just dominant, as Floyd always is. He's the best defensive fighter I think I've ever seen. You know, I mean, when I saw Sugar Ray Robinson, I was a real little kid, and I don't think I appreciate how good he was. And he was toward the end of his career. But Mayweather, he was the best defensive fighter I've ever seen. And he was never going to let a one-arm Pacquiao beat him. Yeah. And, you know, it came out afterward that, you know, Pacquiao was hurt and he didn't want to call off the fight. And so, but that was a huge event. You know, I remember all the celebrities. Donald Trump showed up. All these, you know, Paris Hilton, who was big at the time still. I mean, a lot of athletes, a lot of musicians. I think Drake was there, if memory serves. So, you know, then there were just a lot of really good fights. You know, Pacquiao won, Manuel Marquez, or Eric Morales, Oscar De La Hoya. I mean, Bernard Hopkins. It's just, as I wrote, you could have their own Hall of Fame at the MGM Grand.
That's a great point.
All the great fighters who performed there.
Steve, was there a favorite venue for all the big fights? Again, not counting football and that, but just for the fights, again, whether it was Caesars, whether it was Thomas and Mack, the MGM Grand Garden, you could include T-Mobile because we've covered some fights there. Is there a venue that is your favorite?
Absolutely. And nothing against these other places, but nothing was like covering a fight outside at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah.
The outdoor arena. The vibe was just different. I mean, if you want to talk about like the Roman Coliseum and gladiators, they replicated it about as good as you could, except no one got thrown to the lions. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, you were talking about how you walked onto the property at the MGM on fight night and you could feel the special vibe. When you walked onto the property at Caesar's Palace, the moment you got out of your car and started to walk through the casino to get to the outdoor arena, you knew it was a special night. And, you know, seeing about 24,000 or so for boxing. And it was just phenomenal. I mean, it's really what put Vegas on the map for boxing. And the Grand Garden, to its credit, was able to carry on that tradition. And so now, I don't know if Vegas is still the fight capital of the world, to be perfectly honest. You know, the Saudis are trying to basically take over boxing and kind of make a super merger of promoters and stuff to, you know, get all the big fighters under their umbrella. You know, and Madison Square Garden is still a special place to have a fighter fight. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'll be curious to see what Steve Ballmer does when his Intuit Dome, which opens in a few months.
Yeah.
And how much of a role boxing will play in that new facility in L.A.? What do you think?
It's a great point because, as I've told people, he doesn't mind taking a loss. And the reason that I say that, it is not built for hockey. It is not built, not that they would have the Ducks move there or have a third team there. But, you know, it is really built for the basketball, which means the seats are right on top of the court. But again, you could, conceivably put a ring there.
Of course, they could.
Exactly. So he has the Forum as well, which is still, if you guys haven't gone, I mean, they've really refurbished it and made it a
great
concert venue. I think that's a great point, Steve. I would be shocked if they are not in play for big WWE, boxing, UFC, again, I mean, they've done a great job of trying to pack it as much as they can in terms of the big concerts that they have. It'll open with the, Billy Joel, Bruno Mars, again, a lot of events. And basically it's done. I mean, we had a couple of reporters there who took a look at the food that they have and they walked the court. So it is, by June, and again, we have plenty of time before next season, the Intuit Dome is ready to go. Steve, I also wanted to bring this up with you. We had the passing, again, basically 2 weeks since Bill Walton's passing, the passing of Jerry West and what Jerry West meant to basketball in California with the Lakers, the Clippers, the Warriors, Hall of Fame career as a player, and then a Hall of Fame career as an executive. What do you recall about Jerry West?
As a player, he almost broke my heart in 1970 when he hit the half-court shot at the Forum in Game 5 to beat the Knicks and keep the Lakers in it. As an executive, he was as sharp an evaluator of talent as you will ever have found. He knew how to build chemistry. He knew and understood the economics of basketball, and it's no surprise to me why he had the success he did, not just with the Lakers, not just with the Warriors, but he made the Memphis Grizzlies, if you recall.
Yeah.
A winning team. He hired Hubie Brown to coach. He made some very astute moves in terms of the draft. He understood, and what a nice man. I would see him at the Summer League, and we would just chat for a minute or two. And I won't profess to have known him well, but just to be in his presence, just to chat, he was unbelievable to talk basketball with. And what a great life.
Yeah.
What an amazing run he had. And, of course, to be literally the face of the league is such a special thing. You know, no other league has that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just the best honor you could have given him was to make his logo.
That's right.
On the NBA for everybody. So yeah. he'll he'll be remembered forever.
No doubt about that. Speaking of basketball, Las Vegas, the Aces, again, going for back-to-back. Going for a three-peat. They are the back-to-back champions now. They lost three straight for the first time since 2019, broke that losing streak with a victory over the Phoenix Mercury. It was significant, Steve, because Chelsea Gray was warming up pregame. You'll be at the game tomorrow, where Chelsea, again, if hopefully makes her return. When people wonder why the team is struggling, it really begins and ends with the point guard. That's her nickname, the point guard, Chelsea Gray. Again, you're going to be out there, and the hope is that she's going to play. Speak a little bit about, again, if fans out there, people tuning in, are not familiar with the importance of Chelsea Gray, why is she so important to this team's success?
Because she's the smartest player on this team and arguably the entire WNBA. Her basketball IQ was so off the charts that Becky Hammon defers to her on things that happen on the court. Mm. All right? And Becky Hammon's pretty smart herself.
Yeah.
The coach of the Aces. That's what they've missed. I think her leadership on the floor, her ability to rally up her teammates when things get a little haywire. And there's no doubt they've missed her. I mean, yeah, they won the title without her late, in the playoffs last year, and when they beat the Liberty. And ironically, that's who they're playing tomorrow.
Yeah.
First meeting since the championship game in Brooklyn in October. So it looks like she's real, real close. We'll have a better idea Friday how she did in practice. And I think they'll try and get her in the lineup tomorrow. I don't know how much she plays. They still have three quarters of their season left to play. So there's no need to panic. But I think if the Aces are serious about winning that third straight title, they need to assert themselves better defensively, especially guarding the three-point line, and just play with a little more energy at both ends of the court. Take better shots. Don't give teams a chance to run out on them and beat them down the court in transition. But, they know that, and they get it. Asia Wilson's an amazing leader. She is very accountable, which is what I love about her. Mm-hmm. She takes ownership of everything that she does on and off the floor for this team, which makes her, to me, a very marketable individual. And you've touched on this many times, Arash.
Oh, yeah.
She should be the one getting all these endorsement deals. Now, she does have a few, Gatorade and Nike. She's finally getting her shoe, in small part thanks to you and your banging the drum on her behalf. But, get back to Chelsea Gray real quick. What she can do for them, if she can get them in the right spots, mm-hmm. she anticipates what the other team's going to do better than any other player they have. So, and she has the respect of her teammates.
Yeah.
So when she says something in the huddle, they're listening. They're not tuning her out. So, they need her back, and the sooner for them, the better.
Yeah. So, again, amazing timing for her to come back. They broke their three-game losing streak, but to get Chelsea Gray back now, perfect timing. And again, Chelsea Gray, along with three of her teammates, Asia Wilson, Jackie Young, Kelsey mm-hmm. Plum, will be a part of Team USA. Steve, let's close out on this. A year ago, we were at the Stanley Cup Final at T-Mobile Arena as Las Vegas won. Obviously, we'll have a new champion. I really thought this could have been a moment with the NBA Finals really not being that great for the Stanley Cup Finals to take the spotlight. That has not happened. Again, nope. Florida having a 3-0 lead again. We saw Florida a year ago. Sometimes you need to lose to win. Your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final and Florida, the team that you saw lose a year ago, being one win away from winning the whole thing?
Well, once they beat the Rangers, I thought they could beat either Edmonton or Dallas. They were a better team than they were a year ago. They're stronger. They're tougher. They're more experienced. They've got the better coach in Paul Maurice. And, yeah, I'm a little surprised it's as lopsided as it is. But, you know, Edmonton, all their warts were exposed in this series, from the goalie to the defense to the lack of, you know, scoring depth beyond McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, Florida just has a great game plan. They wear you down. They never panic when they fall behind. Everything they do it with a purpose. And I think, you know, it took a really good Vegas team to beat them last year, even though the Panthers were all banged up by the time they got to the final and stuff. So I would expect this to end tomorrow and on Saturday. And good for the Panthers, good for their fan base. You know, they kind of play, you know, out away from, you know, where the mainstream is, if you will. You know, out in Sunrise, they don't, you know, they don't have the sexiness of the Heat. And so this is an impressive performance by a very good hockey team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Steve. And by the way, whenever they do those camera shots, like overhead the arena, yeah, you really see how in the middle of nowhere is
the Everglades are in there, literally Everglades, in the backyard.
Right there, right? And so when you do that like overhead shot, they got that mall, and then they got the Everglades for miles and miles and miles. So
they should throw alligators on the ice instead of rats.
Exactly.
Their little plastic alligators.
Exactly. All right, Steve, have fun this weekend again. Las Vegas Aces welcoming back Chelsea Gray, fight night as well. So we'll have you back on next week to talk about that. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we will have Grant Mona on talking about the Dodgers and where they are when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 is on the California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Welcome back to the Rush Marconi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment, or just want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome in from the Sporting Tribune our man, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Doing good, Arash. The Dodgers aren't doing good, and basketball could be gone, so there's a few bad things. But it looks like we're going to get up into the 90s here in Southern California, so at least we have that. At least somebody's getting hot here.
Exactly. At least we got some good weather to look forward to. And again, depending on when you're tuning in, either the NBA season is over or it has been extended by a few days. I think either way, we're going to see a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. By the way, could also get that in the Stanley Cup final as well. I mean, this could be a quick final for both leagues. But I wanted to start off with what you just mentioned with the Dodgers. Listen, they've been a very frustrating team to watch. I mean, they've had their moments. Took 2 or 3 against the Yankees in what was one of the bigger regular season series that we can remember. I mean, players talking about it like it felt like a postseason series. But the fact of the matter is, Grant, since May 12th, or, you know, basically for the last month of the season, this has been a 500 team. And again, this is sort of the beginning of the summer, and I think we both probably think that they're going to go on a run as they have in recent years. But for them to be playing 500 ball like over the last month of the season, what has been the problem with this team?
It's been the offense. And it's so weird because you look at their top six players and you think that, well, they can bash their way even when their starting pitching isn't doing well, even when they blow some leads in the bullpen, which they haven't. The bullpen's actually been incredibly solid. They have one of the best bullpens in all of baseball. They have since probably June of last year, I believe. And there's no issues with the bullpen. Every guy that they throw in there, whether they get a guy from being DFA'd, whether they call him up, that bullpen has been stout. Starting pitching has been on and off, but it's been solid since May 14th. Like you mentioned, in the middle of May, something happened where this offense just could not hit anymore. And I know that we saw them score 15 runs in game one against the Texas Rangers. We saw them play actually pretty well against the New York Yankees and put up double digit runs in game two of that series. But ever since, like you mentioned, the middle of May, it's been such a struggle for this offense. And it's not really even been the bottom of the lineup. I know the bottom of the lineup has had struggles all year, and that is still a big issue. But the main concern for me is Mookie and Shohei Ohtani. I mean, those two guys, I think, you know, in my piece that I wrote yesterday, in the last 20 games, Shohei Ohtani's hitting 182. And in the last 20 games, Mookie Betts is hitting 241. So both of those averages are really, really bad for superstars at the top of your lineup. And Freddie Freeman over his past 15 to 20 games has been amazing. I think he's hitting 373 in his past 15 games. This is a guy that was in a big slump himself in the beginning part of the season, and something that we really haven't seen from Freddie Freeman in his tenure as a Dodger so far. And now he's really gotten back to that Freddie Freeman that we all know. But outside of him, Will Smith has taken it. I mean, he was hitting 370 at one point early in the year. Now he's at 288. All these guys, if you go down the list of their batting average or their OPS, and their on base is still pretty good. They're getting on base, but timely hitting, hitting with runners in scoring position. I know Mookie Betts is, his average is up there, but you know, there's been a few moments here and there over the past couple weeks where Mookie Betts just hasn't come through. And you know, he struck out to end the game against the Yankees on Sunday night this past week. And then, you know, obviously last night we saw just a disaster in the eighth inning. It looked honestly, Arash, like October.
Yes.
And I understand, like I really do get that it's June. I understand that the Dodgers have a big lead in the NL West. I get that as well. But for Dodger fans and for people that cover the team as close as we do, it's the process, right? It's how they're playing. It's what they're doing on a day-to-day basis, on a game-to-game basis now to build habits for October. And I'm seeing a lot of things on that, on the offensive end, that are building bad habits towards October. And I'm seeing a lot of things that I saw in October, not just last year, but the year before that too, where it's getting runners on with less than two outs and not being able to get them in, striking out in clutch moments, not playing situational baseball in terms of bunting, moving guys over, doing hit and runs. You know, it's kind of crazy that Freddie Freeman and a rookie in Andy Páez, along with Teoscar Hernandez, are the best hitters on the team right now. That's something that you probably wouldn't have said. And I know that, you know, we're probably going to see Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts turn it on as the season goes on. And they, like I said, it's only June. But I'm looking at a lot of things. And like you mentioned, they've been a 500 ball club since the middle of May. And usually contenders don't do that. Like the Phillies are taking off. The Yankees, I know they lost the series to the Dodgers, but they are taking off. All of these top end contenders are playing great baseball now because they understand how important it is to build a big lead in their division. So while it isn't like the sky is falling doom and gloom, I do think something needs to change. Either you DFA somebody like Chris Taylor, you make a move at the bottom of the lineup, you go get another bat. I know they got Kavon Biggio, and he's actually been pretty good for them so far in his first two games as a Dodger. But something with some oomph, make a move here and there. I mean, you can't just keep doing the same thing for the bottom of that lineup and for guys that really just haven't turned the corner. And, you know, for a Dodgers team that wants to win it all, you have to go all in. And I'm not saying that they got to do it now, But I'm looking at a guy like Luis Robert Jr. from the Chicago White Sox, and a lot of teams are, as a guy that they can go push all their chips to the center of the table, push all their prospects to the center of the table and say, hey, we are serious about winning a championship. And I know that we have a loaded roster now, but if we can go get a guy like him in the middle of our lineup, I mean, that'll push them over the edge. And if the Phillies do get him, because if the Phillies are the team that are ahead of the Dodgers in the NL right now, if the Phillies get him, I mean, I think they're just going to win the World Series. I think they'll win the NL pennant because that lineup already is stacked. So you cannot let the Phillies get him. I think the Dodgers should go all in for him.
Grant, playing devil's advocate here. I mean, listen, if you had told me that the bullpen was a problem and that pitching was a problem, I would have been like, yeah, like that makes sense. But the fact that it's Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and it's the offense, do you think that that'll sort itself out? Because again, I mean, I think the general feeling is like these guys are having a bad month, but that's not going to be the case. And again, you know, they've had their problems in October. We get that. But I mean, do you believe it's as simple as kind of like they could turn the corner tomorrow and all of a sudden they're doing what we think that they could do? Again, You just have to assume that Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, again, the top of the lineup, like, should be not even a question. It's the bottom of the lineup, to your point, that would love to see them make a move. But the top of the lineup, like, I fully expect them to kind of get back to form. Do you think so? I mean, like how concerned are you that their struggles is not just a one-month thing, but it could linger longer than for 1 month?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about those two guys at all. I'm not concerned about Freddie Freeman either. Honestly, I'm not really concerned about Will Smith either, because Will Smith was one of the only guys that showed up in October last year. He actually had the best batting average on the team in October for the starting lineup. I'm not really worried about those guys because, you know, this happened last year too, and it happened in 2022 where there's a midseason lull for Mookie Betts. There was a midseason lull for Freddie Freeman. And in August, those two guys just took off, right? Because they had an amazing month. The Dodgers actually had an amazing month collectively, but those guys went on a huge tear in August to get their averages and to actually put them into MVP finalists. That's why both of those guys were MVP finalists, because they had a huge stretch in August. So like I mentioned, I sound like I'm all doom and gloom right now, but that's just because I don't like the process of it. These guys will be back. Shohei Ohtani, for his past 3 years, has gone into major slumps like he is right now. And he's always rebounded for them. He's always gone on huge stretches. So, you know, while it is a bad process now, I do expect those two guys, specifically Mookie and Shohei, to get back on track and to get their averages back up to 315, 330, and with power numbers. But my concern is still the bottom of the lineup. After those five guys, they need a jolt. I mean, they need somebody at the bottom of the lineup to where you can get on base, you can get guys in that the top guy, if the top guys are on, all you have right now is basically Teoscar Hernandez to get him in. Everyone below him, Austin Barnes, when he catches, has not really been a positive. You know, Kike Hernandez, while he is dynamic, he hasn't really come around with his bat. He's around 200. Gavin Lux has gotten together a little bit as of late, but he really hasn't lived up to that hype that we saw in 2 years ago before he got that knee injury. Chris Taylor has really, really been bad this year. And, you know, it's unfortunate because he's such a fan favorite and he's such a super utility guy that I would love to see him get better. But, you know, you just got to do what you got to do at this point.
Grant, let me get your thoughts on that, because you're right. He is a fan favorite. He's a guy who's been a part of World Series teams. And so you don't want to just throw him to the side. But I was in the clubhouse in Pittsburgh and just you know, and that was when he obviously continued to have a rough night and was, and so his batting average dipped below 100. Having played the game, Grant, I mean, like, what do you do in that situation? Do you just allow him to play through it? I mean, at some point, you have to move on. But I mean, again, to your point, like, this isn't a prospect. This is a guy who's been such a, I go back to that one game, remember, against St. Louis, again, before they had the five-game series against the Giants. It was a do or die, and it was CT3. It was Chris Taylor who had these big moments. And again, he's done it before, and he's such a big part of this team, a clubhouse guy. What do you do with a guy like that who just, And there's got to be, like, he's not just struggling, Grant. I mean, when you're batting below 100, I mean, that's just can't continue. What do you do with him?
Arash, it's a tough situation because Chris Taylor, like you mentioned, is not a prospect. He's not a young guy. So he's making $20 million a year. And also, you can't really send him to the minor leagues because he has the option to decline that in his contract. You know, not a lot of guys have that. You can send Miguel Vargas down and it won't really matter. Yeah. With Chris Taylor, he has the option to say no and I want to be DFA'd or released or traded. So the Dodgers are in a tough spot where this guy has been so integral to their success over the past 6-7 years. And this is a guy that they turned into, like, they gave him a big contract and he earned that big contract because he developed into such a useful player. I mean, even in 2017 in that World Series, I mean, he hit a leadoff home run in that game one of that World Series. Yeah. He was so crucial and so good in that year. And like you mentioned, in 2021, or I believe it was 22, where he hit that wild card walk-off home run to give them the opportunity to get to the Giants. And look, you know, with Chris Taylor, he's so dynamic on the field to where you can put him in the infield, you can put him in the outfield. And that's a big reason why they haven't let him go yet, is because he's so beloved by that clubhouse. He's so beloved by the fan base. There's really not much you can do other than trade him. But, you know, I think oftentimes, and I feel like this with Austin Barnes, is that, you know, there's some guys that you just can't let go just because of the locker room chemistry. That's a big thing in baseball, like locker room chemistry and, you know, having the guys be happy with each other and the energy that you have in that clubhouse when you're with a team for so long. You can't really like get rid of those guys cold turkey, right? You can't just send them down. It just sends a bad look. And as bad as Chris Taylor has been and as underwhelming as Austin Barnes has been, the clubhouse loves those guys and they've been around the team for a long time. Like Clayton Kershaw always calls Austin Barnes his catcher. Yeah. And you know, it's tough to let go of those guys and that's why they haven't yet. So, you know, I guess you got to just let him play through it. And look, I've been in major slumps myself in my career and all you can do is just keep going and getting the reps, honestly. And that's a big reason why the Dodgers sent James Outman down is because they needed him to get no pressure reps. Like when you're on the Dodgers, all the lights are on you.
Yeah.
And when you send him to AAA in Oklahoma City, you get the reps that you need. And look, James Outman's thriving. He's working on things in AAA. But the thing is, with Chris Taylor and some of these veterans, you can't really do that. So you got to let them get the reps in the major leagues. And even if you don't let them get a lot of playing time, Arash, I mean, just having them around, I think, is the best option. Even letting them see the game, be at the major league level, have the confidence that, hey, I'm still a major league player. I think the confidence is the biggest part. And Dave Roberts and that front office is doing everything they can in that confidence department, giving him the at-bats. You know, he's had big moments, so maybe they're banking on him having big moments later in the season. I'm not really sure at this point.
As we get ready for the off-season, I guess, in both hockey and in basketball, we'll be keeping track this weekend of possibly J.J. Redick having a formal sit-down with the Lakers. But another big question in Los Angeles is, what is going to be the future of Paul George? You know, two things have been talked about. Well, one thing is not going to happen. The Clippers are not going to give Paul George a max contract. And quite frankly, they probably shouldn't. So, you know, but I mean, they still want him. They still will make a very competitive like offer to him. But one of the things that has been talked about is that if Paul George wants to leave, and obviously he wants to get paid, that they may have a sign and trade situation similar to the one when Chris Paul got traded. I think that is what you would want, Grant. But touch on the options that the Clippers have with Paul George. Again, the one thing that we know for certain, having talked to Lawrence Frank, is that they will not give him a max deal. But that's okay. Like that doesn't mean that he's gone. But sometimes that hurts a player who thinks that, listen, I'm a franchise guy or that I should get that contract. So if he's of the mindset that I want to leave and get paid, for him to do both, he'll have to work with the Clippers on a sign and trade. Are there potential suitors out there? And is there a potential fit that you think would help the Clippers and Paul George?
Yeah, look, again, another tricky situation here because the Clippers are very adamant about not giving him that max deal. And Kawhi Leonard even took less than a max in order for Paul George to sign a lesser deal. So all three of him, James Harden and Kawhi Leonard could be on the team for the foreseeable future. But it's very obvious that there are other teams that will throw the max at him. So for him and for the Clippers, it's a matter of, hey, you know, this is your hometown. You're from here. We already gave you a contract extension in 2020. We believe in your talent. We know that you're really good, but you know, we just can't afford to give you the max deal right now. And for Paul George, do you want to go to a team that may be a little bit worse than the Clippers and be away from home, but get that max money? Or do you want to stay home where you're from, be a part of a new era of Clippers basketball in the Intuit Dome? With your new redesign, your new rebrand, you could be still the face of the Clippers with Kawhi and James Harden for the foreseeable future for the next 3 years. It's really on him. But if we're looking at sign and trades, this is the thing with sign and trades, Arash, with the Clippers and Paul George, is that the team that is trading for him, they would be really hard capped. So they wouldn't be able to sign anybody over the second apron. Yeah. They wouldn't really be able to sign any MLE players. So it really kind of handicaps the team that's trading for him. But this would be a favor, like you mentioned about Chris Paul back in 2017, I believe it was. It was a favor by Chris Paul. He didn't have to do that. Yeah. He did it for the service of the Clippers. Like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave you guys with at least something. So, you know, Paul George, I know there's reports about that right now. If he does that, I mean, obviously that would be very, very beneficial for the Clippers because I would assume that there would be at least one great player coming back and some young assets. I don't know about draft picks. I don't know if there would be a lot of draft picks, but there would be young assets coming back in that trade. I've always thought that a sign and trade to the Knicks would work out very well for both teams. You could get a guy back in Julius Randle. That's an all NBA caliber player. You could get maybe Jericho Sims back in that trade, a Bojan Bogdanovic. If he does go to the Orlando Magic, you can get back one of their young players. They have a plethora of them. Mm-hmm. The Sixers are a tough sign and trade because they don't really have a lot of assets that the Clippers can get back that are really useful or highly upsided talent. So I don't really believe in that one. The Pacers, maybe if you can do a sign and trade with Obi Toppin as well, because he's a free agent. So there are options. I just think that that sign and trade is probably the least likely just because Arash, like it just handicaps, like now with the new CBA and all the rules about going over a cap and hard cap and aprons, it's just very tough for the team that is trading for him, actually signing and trading for him, to do anything after they do that. So I think it's either he wants the max and leaves, or he takes a discount and comes back and says, let's run it back and I'm at home and I'm comfortable. So there's a lot of options right now. We're just going to have to see until the end of June.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point that, you know, Chris Paul, you know, helped the Clippers out when you look back at that trade with Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, kind of like that core group that made up a really fun Clippers team that made it to the postseason. So we'll see how all that shapes out. Again, a very, I think both franchises are at a crossroads here. The Lakers as they hire a head coach and the Clippers as they move into a new arena and trying to figure out, you know, what do they do? Will they continue with Kawhi and with Paul George? All right, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again on Monday. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call, quickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.